after a completely insane amount of things to do, just pure busyness, schedules getting crossed up, we forgot to do a show last week. And, well, it happens because life gets crazy sometimes. What that allowed to have happen is that Lucas has come back from the dead. They let him out of whatever cellar they had him swept up in, and he has been freed for better or worse. We're going to find out, because today we have some sensitive topics, some things that in the Full Tilt Discord and some things that I have seen on the X app. I can't call it the Bird app anymore. The X app had talked about it at great length. You know, it's been crazy. We're going to talk about changing your rookie drafts to pre-NFL rookie drafts, and we're also going to do some ADP shuffling. I can't wait. Jacob's so excited his internet froze again, and Lucas, as I mentioned, is back. I can't wait. Let's get in to this edition of the Full Tilt Dynasty Podcast. Okay, I just need to start everything off with the Fantasy Points data suite is not only live, business is bussin'. It is going bananas. It's unreal. So shout out to the whole Fantasy Points team. It's been phenomenal. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a company man, all right? I believe in what I am saying. Look, we gave away 2 Fantasy Point data suites for 2023, and I still have not received those DMs. So you should be listening. I hope you're listening. I will be reposting this in both the Football Absurdity Discord that we gave one away to and the Full Tilt Discord that we gave one away to. But guess what? We got 5 more to give away in Full Tilt. And for anyone listening, coming over from the Bulletproof Discord, guess what? I have been given the ability to, well, give away a few more. So for Bulletproof Discord members, 5 of you are going to get the chance to get a $50 2023 Fantasy Points data suite. You're going to want to check this thing out. It goes up to $200 in 2024. They're basically giving this thing away for free. I know you're all data nerds already. It doesn't help to add more to the repertoire. Getting into big words today. So all you have to do is be sub to the Full Tilt FFB YouTube channel. If you're wherever you're listening to this, whatever, be sure to be hitting subscribe, hitting the bell, 5 stars. Tell me my hat looks funny. Doesn't matter. Do all that, but leave a comment that says Bulletproof FP Data Suite. All right. If you leave a comment on any one of our videos, preferably the most recent, the better. You comment, Bulletproof FP Data Suite. I will be picking a winner by the time we go live next week, next Friday, should have 5 winners from the Bulletproof Discord that I will be picking and reading out live on air. I will get in touch with you. So do that, because this tool, unbelievable. And for Full Tilt, guess what? We got 4 more to give away, like I mentioned. So we are going to do the same thing. We are going to do Full Tilt FP Data Suite on the comments, and I will be checking for Friday. We should have about 9 to give away this week. You're going to want to do that. Also, what up, TD? He's coming back. Look, this topic that I want to first, I'm so fucking happy you're back, Lucas. Like, I'm so happy. We've missed you all. And obviously, Jacob, you're one of the busiest people in fantasy football, it feels like now. So,
well, us now. Bar exams are done unless I failed them and then I have to write them again. But even then, I don't have to write them for a while. So
you'll have some time in between. Yeah. I have zero doubts that you passed it.
Well, let's see. A lot of them.
We briefly talked about our first topic here, which is moving your rookie drafts. Quite a while ago. I feel like this was kind of brought up with Scott on the now controversial episode we had with Scott Barrett.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
He will be back for a roster construction episode as soon as we can. Awesome. So shout out Scott. That one, I can't imagine what the comments are going to be like, and that one's going to be crazy. But you briefly mentioned the rookie draft being moved to before the NFL draft. And I've slowly had my rookie drafts moved over there. And I'm starting to put it out there that next year we're going to start running polls on changing the date of the draft. Because that's how you have to handle it.
For sure. I want more pre-draft, absolutely.
Right. So we're going to start the show off hot with that. Can we start with that? What do you feel like are the pros and cons? I just totally hit that hard P right into that microphone. I'm sorry for everybody's eardrums. What are the pros and cons to moving your rookie drafts to you to before the NFL draft? Because there was some serious pushback by a few people.
Well, the pros are I think it puts more work on you, which is the pro and the con, but it puts a little bit more work on you to have your takes formulated prior to the draft process. I also think it creates a lot of fun strategy where you're deciding, do I want to go for like a my guy who I really believe in individually as a prospect, but maybe he doesn't have the best draft capital projection, versus going for a guy who I'm not quite as big of a fan of, but I think he's going to get his name called on day one or day two. And so it's probably a safer bet to retain his value. I think that's a really interesting strategic point. And then I think it rewards you a lot. Like one of the bummers for me during this year's draft, and I haven't always been this lucky or unlucky, depending on how you phrase it, but a lot of times like you kind of come up with these takes on guys pre-draft and they have a certain order of where they go and you end up with kind of your guys that you like a lot more in the field, you think is undervalued by the field. Mm-hmm. And then everything changes after the draft. And when you have certain guys that you really like and they go higher than people expect or they go to a great landing spot, you should get to be excited about that. You should be happy about that. And I'm almost unhappy about that. Like that happened to me this year where Gibbs was a guy pre-draft, his ADP was around 1.6. A-Chain was going in the mid to late second. Kincaid was pretty consistently the tight end two off the board going in the early second. Like those were three guys I really liked. They wind up getting these, Gibbs gets incredible draft capital. Kincaid and A-Chain get really strong landing spots. And all of a sudden their prices go way up. And what happens is like, I'm still pretty overweight Gibbs, but I had to trade up for him a lot. I had to trade into the draft for him. Like I'm sitting there with all those 1.6s. He's not coming there ever. Like If it had been pre-draft, I could have had 40% exposure to Jahmyr Gibbs. I could have taken him on my 1.2s, 1.3s, 1.4s, 1.5s, and 1.6s. And then you get, all of a sudden, it's like, I have to pay a freaking late first-round picks for Kincaid and A-Chain now. I end up being, I'm slightly above the field on A-Chain. I'm below the field on Kincaid. That never would have happened if it was prior to the draft. So it's just kind of a bummer that way, where you wind up almost rooting against guys that you loved to get good landing spots because you kind of want a chance to actually pick them at a better cost.
It definitely feels like it can make you very sad. And for example, I think it almost doesn't reward you enough, like you mentioned. Like, so for example, you had a great discussion with JJ Zacharyson on this year's show. Shout out JJ about. Mm-hmm. He had JSN higher, you had Gibbs higher, and now there's almost no drafts where JSN goes ahead of Gibbs. So you're almost not rewarded for having that stance early, where now you're kind of robbed of that kind of huzzah moment that you should feel from a rookie draft. That's just the big example that I can picture. And then, the biggest argument that I've seen for having it against it is, of course, the quarterback situation. Pre-NFL mm-hmm. rookie draft last year, people got burned by Malik Willis 101. We've seen people leave leagues because of it. We've seen people blow up teams because of it. I once saw somebody try to veto a trade from 3 months prior. Like, it was deadly. Yeah. And then this year, it is. And it was the same thing with Will Levis now this year. There's 1-6 if he gets first round draft capital.
Yeah, I was in a pre-draft, I think. Maybe more than that. Sometimes I get confused on which ones are my pre-draft rookie drafts and which are just like heavy leagues. But one of them for sure, Will Levis went ahead of CJ Stroud. And he went ahead of CJ Stroud. He went ahead of JSN, and he went ahead of Gibbs. And that's not fun. if you're the Will Levis.
That's just on you at that point.
What is on you? That's the whole thing, right? It's like, it's a personal responsibility thing. People, you know, and the reality is if you don't want to be subjected to that, you can always trade your picks. So I think it's more fun. But anyway, but yeah, you are riding the roller coaster. Like Anthony Richardson, he's the contrary example. Anthony Richardson was the opposite, where for me, it was like, look, I'm not going to take him pre-draft. I'm sketched about the draft capital. And if he gets a draft capital, I'll take him at 1-2. But I was taking JSN and Bryce and Gibbs and Stroud ahead of him in the pre-draft stuff, because I was like, he could have gotten the Malik Willis thing, and you're holding a massive bag of shit if that happens, you know. It obviously doesn't happen, but that's, you know, you pay to play, right? So that's the risk.
Well, and that's one of the biggest thing that I noticed in all these discussions. It was, and one came directly from a Discord member. Actually, a goose was one of the people that really drove this discussion home, and it was that his picks that he's currently holding, if it were to change, the picks that he's holding on to and he's acquired would lose value. He feels that it loses value if you shift the date because you have less information.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with, like, you should be making those decisions
ahead of time.
Yeah,
right. I agree. And it's obviously
now would be a good time.
My counterpoint to that is, does it lower your value if everyone's running off the same information?
So yeah, I think it does.
I was saying not as much, because if everyone's running off the same thing, everyone has to do the same work. I don't think the draft capital shouldn't be the last thing. Well, it's the last thing. It shouldn't be the one and only thing determining the final value of said draft picks, was my biggest point.
Well, I'll tell Lucas in here. He's really,
I'm just quiet. I got used to this thing again.
You gotta stake your claim. I mean, like a dog on a tree, just piss all over it.
Oh, gosh. Well, that'll be about what this take is. I don't think it hurts your value that much. I mean, everybody's working from the same sort of playing field, and I think it does end up rewarding those who have a better process than others. I think it makes you be a little bit more invested in the pre-draft process, and it's not just you making whatever thoughts you have about a player because of how they performed in college, ignoring everything until the first week of May, whenever rookie drafts start happening, and then you get into it based off of their landing spots. It keeps you more engaged throughout the offseason, which I find really fun. And you do get to have some of those really good values whenever you're taking people or taking players that are crushing everything that's important to score fantasy points. And if somebody can't see that before the draft, then they shouldn't be able to take advantage of those values. Just, you know, you deal with it, you move on. And I would think that if you really trust your process, then it raises the value of those picks a little bit more, in terms of you might not have to even pay as much to get them. But if you're in a league full of people who all trust their process, then your pick value is going to be just fine.
And I think too, with the argument was that the early pick value and the late pick value holds, which, and it's the middle value in that correct. That gets hurt the most. And maybe, but it's when you pick and miss that badly at the beginning, Malik Willis 101 and Will Levis 1-6, which would have been the two major problems this year. I feel like the big swing and misses at the beginning will actually hurt more than the swings and misses in the middle.
I think the early stuff is really on you. Like, if you're taking a guy who has a lot of draft capital risk at their ceiling, that's just kind of on you, right?
Right.
And then if you're going to be the one who's like, oh, you know, like Anthony Richardson was falling sometimes to the 1-5, 1-6 in some of those pre-draft rookie drafts. And it's like, okay, that can go one of two ways for you, right? Either he's going to get the draft capital, and that's the cheapest you're ever going to get Anthony Richardson, or he's not going to get the draft capital, and that's the most expensive anyone's going to buy Anthony Richardson. But you get the choice, right? You get the agency of like, am I going to take this risk on and potentially get the best price I'm ever going to get on this guy? You know, or you can defer that risk and take somebody else. I don't think that hurts. You know, that's those early picks. I agree with you. It's the mid pick because everything gets really flat, right? Like when we had all these running backs, and it's like, what really differentiates once you get past the first few running backs? Like what really differentiates those running backs? It's like who gets drafted higher, who gets drafted to a better depth chart, and then you just so it's like, you know, pre-draft. Yeah, I don't know. It could have been Zach Evans going round three. It could have been Kendre Miller in round five. It could have been Sean Tucker going in round four. It could have been Roshan Johnson going around six. Like you just have no idea, really. You know, you can read up on all the mock drafts. You can, you know, plug it into whatever models you have. You can do whatever you want, but you don't know for sure. And it does mean that, yeah, you're going to get more round four picks that are total steals, and you're going to get more round two picks that are total air balls.
Right. Those are all really great points. I mean, I don't really have many. I know a good Devy pod that can help value those picks. That's true. Full Tilt Devy pod. Every two Wednesdays a month, you'll get one of those. So you'll want to check in with that. And for the most part, John will help you out. But there are some that I don't know. We'll have to find out. You have to tune in, see what he gets right, see what he gets wrong. Leave a comment. I think I'm 100% pro pre-NFL rookie draft now. I think I'm pro. I've heard more.
I'd like to have like 50-50 between my leagues, which obviously okay. would require like converting almost 50% of my leagues. So at this point, I'm nowhere near the point of diminishing returns, but I think I'd like to be kind of 50-50.
Yeah, I think it would be mostly a lot of fun.
Wouldn't you feel FOMO when everybody else is doing rookie drafts if all years are done? Like, I'd feel some FOMO at that point. If I couldn't get any.
You know, you'd need to have some locked up.
It's like middle. It's like early May. Everybody's posting their rookie draft. You're like, all mine are done. You're just posting the meme. It's like they don't know that I changed all my leagues to pre-draft rookie drafts.
You're doing all yours in March. No one cares. They're all a psycho.
I want a steady stream. You know, I want like a cup. I want like 25%, and I want like. Here's what I want. I want 15% pre-combine. I want another 15% in like March, then another like 20% in April, and then the other 50, you know, right after.
Oh, that does sound that actually does sound pretty good. We're gonna have to start making some posts and some leads.
Maybe 1% in August of the previous year.
That sounds like a Devy league.
Oh, that's just going absolutely insane. Yeah. That would be kind of crazy. I think, and one of the last things I'm going to say on this, because I feel like we've done a pretty good combination of pros, cons, do's and don'ts, and concerns. I really like that. If we miss something, leave a comment below. Right, I'm sure we're going to get enough of them. So leave a comment below. Let us know what we missed, any points, any takes. Bring it up next week even. I can't wait for that. But I feel like it's just more rewarding. And I think that's going to be the last thing I kind of hit on that. And maybe it's competitiveness in me. Maybe it's the need to feel like I kind of know what I'm doing or that I know that I'm completely wrong. It just feels like there's something definite there. And there's going to be nothing
more fun.
Oh, 100%. I think it would.
It's nice to have something to root for when you're watching the draft.
Yeah. I think it would make the draft more fun. And especially because the draft I have the most fun at is the home league rookie draft because it is a 30 second clock. That is what gives you that rush. I think the next best thing is going to be sweating out a month and a half leading up to the rookie draft, praying that you got it right. I feel like it's going to be the next best thing.
Well, that's a good sweat. And the other problem is, like, I find that so much of the NFL draft, I mean, it's always fun to, like, to find out. But so much of it is, like, negative energy. It's like I'm, from a fantasy perspective, it's like, what am I rooting for? Well, really, like, I'm rooting for the players that I do, because I don't have any of the, like, outside of, I think about 10% of my leagues currently are either Devy leagues, C2C leagues, or have pre-draft rookie drafts. So for, like, the other 90%, I don't really have a solidified interest in the rookies yet. So more than anything, I'm rooting for the players on existing teams that I have to not get competition. So I'm just like, every time Dallas comes up, I'm like, don't take a running back. and then it's like, if there's players that I don't have any of in Dynasty, I'm like rooting for them to get screwed. So it's like, you're constantly like sweating against your own interests, and you're like hoping for the demise of other players. And it becomes like a very negative rooting experience where I'm like, screw you, Ken Walker. It's like, you know, it's not really what you want to be doing.
Yeah. That might've, hopefully that sold a lot of people, because that is the perfect way to describe how that would go. The emotional rush, the feeling, that's how it would be. I kind of equate it to the whole time leading, I've told the story before, but the whole time leading up to the Ravens drafting Lamar Jackson and the emotional roller coaster I felt after multiple trade downs and then trading back up. Like, I feel like that would be me on draft night, but thinking about my fantasy teams instead of my favorite team, where it would get to a point where it would hit and it would be me running around the house screaming, much like Jacob did when he found out he pulled double 101 in lottery drafts. This year to land the 101, the running around fist pumping in the house, and then immediately sending out trade offers the minute the video stopped recording.
We ran really pure. Hey, that 101, no, the 101 that you have the video of is in Frozen Tundra, and that 101 I still have.
Oh, you do still have that. That's right. Yeah. It was the FNL one you traded
right away. FNL one was immediately moved, but this one I still got.
The FNL one was such horseshit, too. Just sidebar. Yeah. So if you don't know, we're going to talk about it right now. Let's talk about, just because we're bringing it up. I see your question here, Depeche. We're going to answer that. But now that I'm thinking about it, first off, the lottery drafts is the way to go. That's the next thing I'd love to be converted. Lottery drafts, way to go for the bottom six. Do you know what the lottery is, Lucas? You've done one?
I have not done one.
Okay. So this is great. This is the first time I ever heard of this was in the home league. And it has been tradition ever since, and it is the most intense thing I've been a part of, and it got put into the league of record because I had to do it. The bottom six teams, right, you get your max points to get your standings, and then your numbers are ran, and it is a lottery to see who ends up with the first overall pick. So anyone between positions 1 and 6 has a chance at landing the 101, and then everyone else's position just kind of moves accordingly. Jacob had the furthest outside shot. He missed the playoffs because of Julio Jones's one catch took him out of the playoffs. His like last catch of his career, it feels like.
And it was a really weird scenario where I had like a very like middling team the whole year. And then like with 2 or 3 weeks left before the end of the season, like at the trade deadline, I sold off all my players. So I was like, I'm going to try and get into like third or fourth lottery position. And then it was like one of those spots where it's like, I don't know, you get rid of the vets and you call up the kids from the farm team and they go crazy. So like after the trade deadline, like I had sold all my players, but then I won 2 games in a row. And so all of a sudden I could get into the playoffs, but I didn't really want to, because like I didn't actually have a good team. I was just like I had sold everybody off, but I had Jerick McKinnon, and it was like, the trade deadline was right before McKinnon started going berserk. So I couldn't trade him. He was just stuck there scoring 30 every week, like winning me games. And it was really annoying. Then literally, like, I was playing Tom in the last week, and Tom's team was dominant. I think going in, I was probably like, I don't know, 40 or 50 point like underdog, I'm sure. And then sure enough, like going into the final game, like he just needed one Julio catch, and it didn't look like he was going to get it. It took until like the fourth quarter for him to get the one Julio catch on Monday Night Football. Otherwise,
and it secured my bye week.
The playoffs. Yeah.
That game secured my bye week as well. And then it kicked him out, and he out of nowhere we ran the lottery numbers, which if you have that off the top of your head, if you could explain how that selection actually works. There it is. A 1 in 36 chance to actually end up with the 101. We run the simulation, and I could not believe it. I almost fell over. Jacob had won it, and it was incredible. And that is a feeling when you're sweating it out. I feel like the max points four thing determining 1 through 6 is fine. That's the other best way, in my opinion. That includes taxi squad players, people. Mm-hmm. My opinion, your taxi squad players should be going towards that. Include them all.
I just like the lottery because it makes things a little bit more suspenseful, and I think it adds the strategy a little bit where it's like if there is one guy in the class, it's not just like, okay, that pick is it. Like you kind of, it creates more of an interest in all of the other picks where it's like, oh, like what if this guy just misses the playoffs? Like this guy even is, you know, the 7 seed or the 8 seed. And I guess, I don't know, maybe you could say it makes people more hesitant to move their picks because it's a lottery, but I do think it adds haven't found it to actually be the case in practice.
I don't think it does. Not in my personal experience, because the people that are like, oh, well, it's low odds anyway, I'd rather take a shot at potentially going on a run and winning it all. I feel like that is just as often as, well, I could just, you know, if I just miss, I could still have a shot. Like, I just feel like it really, what it does for me is it really separates the tweeners. Like picks 5 and 6, right? And then the people that are finishing, you know, 6th and 5th. It's really going to determine whether or not you sell off or go in, because you don't want to be in that 4-spot bracket. That's the worst 4-spot bracket. It becomes even worse. So that was a little bonus bit about the draft lottery for rookie picks. It's a must. If you haven't done one, I encourage you to do one. It is great. If you have any questions about it, you can reach out and we will answer them. I want to answer this question because it's been chilling here for a hot minute. Depeche. I have 1-7, 1-9, and 205 in a 10-team 1 QB rookie draft.
Come on, man. Come on.
You got to bump
past the 10-team 1 QB.
Let's get this to at least Superflex in the future.
And 2 more teams, too.
And 2 more. You can find them. They're out there. Who would you be looking to draft at those spots now that we've roasted them? Should I take Kincaid, Richardson, or take a risk with Charbonnet, Miller, or someone like Tank?
I honestly don't play in any 1 QB dynasty, so I really don't know how to value the quarterbacks, and I just never will know how to value the quarterbacks. But my intuition is to just not value them. I'd probably be shooting at Kincaid in a 10-team 1 QB because I just think the positional the replacement level is so high at running back and wide receiver in a 10-team 1 QB where like everyone has David Montgomery's and Miles Sanders is on their benches and Ayuk's on their benches and DJ Moore's on benches. Like it's just there's really good players on your bench that you really only have so many spots to diversify. So I'd be prioritizing Kincaid, I think, if I can.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. I will say with the 109, depending on what your quarterback situation looks like, Richardson might be worth it there whenever all of the elite tier players are out. And he is, I don't know if you would classify him as an elite dynasty quarterback in terms of like as a rookie. He's definitely really high, but you know.
His ceiling is.
His ceiling is really high. And he should have a fairly decent floor. So it's not a bad pick at 109.
It certainly is more valuable in Superflex. Obviously, every quarterback is, but like relative to all of the rest of the quarterbacks, Richardson really is benefited by the 1 QB in that, like, the floor of him being bad and losing his job in a couple of years just does not matter.
Right.
Like, it's like if you're in a 1 QB league, it's really only the top 5 to 6 quarterbacks that are like worth something. And after that, you know, you're kind of just already like the replacement level is already coming in at QB10. So if there's just not really any point to rostering a Bryce Young or a CJ Stroud in a 1 QB format when,
right.
But Richardson for sure, the risk is almost completely gone. Obviously you're paying a lot less for him. So.
Right. So 1-9, I'm definitely looking at Richardson for sure. Something like a 205. I have no idea who would end up being there at like 2.5 in a 1 QB. I have no idea. I wish I could answer that and be more prepared for that. It's just way outside the wheelhouse.
Probably one of the day two running backs or one of the round two tight ends.
Yeah, it'd be like Kendre Miller, Roschon Johnson. Both of them would be in that range.
LaPorta and Mayer.
Well, I mean, he's talking about Miller and Tank and Charbonnet here. I'm not sure if he means at like 1.9, but I mean, Charbonnet was going as, you know, the 13th pick in rookie drafts, the 201 in super flexes. So it wouldn't surprise me to see him gone already in that case. For me, since he's, we talked about Richardson at 1.9, that's probably what I would be doing. At 1.7 though, I'm taking Achane right now, because if you're already going to go and get a Kincaid's probably going to go a little bit earlier. At least I would assume he would, because this is like his stock is rising seemingly every day. And you cannot go through a Miami Dolphins beat page without constant drum beating for huge buzz. I mean, he even had at Cam's Not Sober out there writing a Twitter thread about how good he is. Like, it's, you get people like Cam out there hyping him up. Shout out Cam. I mean, it's everywhere. So I'm probably taking him and at 1.7, because I think that payoff for him, if everything stands, it looks like Cook might be signing with the Jets. I think the payoff at 1.7 for a guy like Achane versus those other backs, and even a guy like Kincaid, when you could probably get a Mayer or a LaPorta a little bit later, which is my preference, I'm smashing that. Anything else? Are we moving on? All right, we're moving it. We're going to be back in a couple of seconds, so sit tight. Okay, speaking of people's stocks moving, we're going to talk about some ADPs, because since the last time you and I talked about this, Jacob, it's kind of gone bananas. Talked about how Kyler Murray is probably going to continue to fall, and guess what? He fell. That's definitely in part of my notes here that I have. But I want to talk, I want to first ask for you, Lucas. You were away for quite a while.
Yeah. It's a completely different world.
Right. And when you came back, we had mentioned that we are going to go over some things that look a lot different to you now than it was. What's the biggest change, maybe in philosophy, that you can find? I'm using the, as always, unmatched bulletproof ADP. It is an unmatched service. You should be tapping into that. I see one glaring strategic change that I'm looking at here that I'll touch on after, but do you see something when you're just looking at maybe the first 10 rounds that is completely different from where it was when you left?
I think Kyler Murray not gaining any ADP and in fact losing more kind of surprises me. It looks like he's going to be playing at some point in time this season, and he's still going late second, early third. That kind of seems like a cheat code almost for building out your dynasty teams, especially like having that elite quarterback that you can put into your super flex spot, and you're not having to trade up to get him. You just have to wait a little while for him to get fully healthy. That's wild to me. And also, it's weird seeing the rookies in here. Just whenever I left, they just weren't in any of this, and now they are. So that's kind of strange. Anthony Richardson already being in the first round. I shouldn't be surprised by that, but I am.
Pretty nuts.
And the fact that
Jacob's response.
Yeah, and the fact that depending on what league you're in, he might be going above Bijan Robinson. That's another kind of a shocker, to say the least. But yeah, the biggest one's Kyler.
Well, that's a big thing where, like, I think the Anthony Richardson versus Bijan Robinson value is so different when you look at like rookie drafts versus startups versus trades, just in the sense that, like, in a rookie draft, most of the time teams have their, like, well, obviously sometimes a team being a one-on-one doesn't have their quarterback, but it's quite likely that they do, that they have their quarterback set up. And so it's like they're going to take who they like. And almost every rookie draft I was in, Bijan Robinson goes number one. In a startup, like you get in that spot at the 1-2 turn, and usually you don't have a quarterback yet. And it's just really terrifying to click Bijan and start out your startup with a running back, especially if it's not third round reversal. I mean, you look and it's like if you take Bijan Robinson and you know, and especially if you don't take a quarterback there, it's like you're really committing to late round quarterback, and people crave getting those quarterbacks filled in right away in the dynasty startup street. So it does make sense to me that they go closer together there. I don't think Richardson's ADP is like makes any sense at all, but he's fun. So
he is fun.
He's not any plays for my team, so like I'm just not going to expend mental energy like going against his ADP. But I mean, obviously, do I think it makes like any sense in the world that he goes ahead of Deshaun Watson? Like, no, I don't. I think that's really stupid, but it's cool.
That's one of the ones. I mean, Deshaun is one of the ones that stand out to me. He's not on my list of notes, but he's one of the ones that stand out to me. And you're right, the Kyler Murray one seems crazy, but right beside him, equally crazy, is the shift on tight ends. According to the Bulletproof ADP, not a single tight end in the second round. I can honestly not remember when Andrews, Kelsey, or Pitts wasn't going in the second round. And even in tight end premium leagues, I'm seeing this, where they're shifting into the third round at times. And I don't know why the stink, why the sour on the tight end position more than normal. I mean, let's be honest. I don't know if it's because of the rookie wave of tight ends coming in is so hot right now. People feel like they can wait and get like the next era. There's no reason to me to have Mark Andrews at 3-10.
Yeah, I think, I think people just don't like how Andrews finished the year. They don't like how Pitts, you know, how his whole year went. So I think that's what's getting people. I mean, we're seeing this even in best ball right now, where last year the tight end best ball ADP was Kelsey in the late one, Andrews in the mid to late two. And then you'd get Kittle and Waller typically going in the fourth. Like even as the names have changed, the valuation on tight ends is down across the board, where Kelsey obviously is going higher, but there's a limit on really how high you can draft him in dynasty. It's just fascinating that he is the dynasty tight end one right now in ADP at 34. But he, of course, goes really early. You don't usually see Andrews come off the board until the late third, mid to late third now, which is later than we've had the second tight end come off the board in a while. And then, you know, you don't see Pitts, of course. Now, there's several tight ends even between Andrews and Pitts, but Pitts is coming off in the 6-7 turn. So that, you know, the market is not viewing Pitts as someone who's likely to score a whole lot of points this year, and then viewing Andrews as a good bet, but not – definitely not in that elite tier of assets in seasonal leagues that he was expected to be last year. I'm interested in that. I don't think it makes a whole ton of sense. I think he had the cold start end of the year without Lamar Jackson. And which is, it's funny because of course this time this offseason, the people who didn't like Mark Andrews said, oh, it's because he was with Huntley and then didn't do so well with Huntley. That's the fun of small samples. And then, you know, you get Monken in there. I get that the wide receiver group is better this year, but Mark Andrews is just, I think, clearly an alpha in the NFL. He's proven that time and time again. I'm not really that worried about target competition for him. I'm grateful that they're half real wide receivers so that, like, because the offense when it was just Lamar and Andrews and after Bateman went down, like, it just wasn't a good offense. They didn't have any other players. Right? Like they had Greg Roman calling the plays. Their wide receiver one was freaking DeMarcus Robinson. Like that's not a good environment. And I mean, Bateman and Flowers and OBJ are all really high variants. Like OBJ is old, injured, and Bateman's probably hurt, and Flowers is just a rookie. So I don't even think all three of them are going to be good. But you add in three, like, certainly better bets than DeMarcus Robinson. Like hopefully at least one or two of them are real NFL players, and then you have yourself an offense.
Yeah, I will say that is something that burned me very hard coming back from this was I think it was like my first day back on Sleeper and I see somebody has Kyle Pitts up for sale. I'm like, oh, all right, I'm going to go get me some Kyle Pitts. And I'm trading at values that he's probably not That's worth, fine. But I go, oh, it's Kyle Pitts.
I don't care. I would trade it.
So I ended up doing.
I don't give a shit about market value for Pitts and Andrews. Just that if someone's willing to trade me one of them and I don't have one of them, I don't have the other one of them. I'm in. I don't care. I'll pay above the market value. It doesn't bother me. I'll happily pay where I value.
So I traded four Kyle Pitts and Sky Moore, and I traded away David Njoku, Michael Pittman, my first, which was the 107, and an early second.
Yeah, I'll do that every day. I don't give a shit.
I wouldn't even think twice.
The fact that I could have gone cheaper. That's like
I don't know that even that you can get him that much cheaper. I think there's a big difference between, like, especially Pitts. Like, the people who have Pitts at this point, pretty high proportion of people who are in it and playing the long game on Kyle Pitts.
Yeah.
I'm not selling Kyle Pitts. Like, there's no chance. So, like, it doesn't matter what his ADP is. I'm never selling him. I think most people that have Pitts are either he's entirely unavailable or he's certainly unavailable anywhere close to his ADP price. Like, if he was just constantly gettable at his ADP price, I would have 80% exposure. I don't. He's one of my most rostered players, but there's plenty of leagues where I don't have him. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, there's a scarcity effect. It's one thing with, like, a bunch of wide receivers where it's like, okay, I think X wide receiver is undervalued. Well, I'm only going to pay his market value because there's so many wide receivers and there's plenty of them that I think are undervalued. Like, I'm just only going to try to get the undervalued wide receivers at their value. There just aren't really that many elite tight ends. Like, to me, anyone who's willing to sell me Pitts or Andrews, I'm willing to pay. I'm not going to pinch pennies over it. I'm just grateful for that opportunity.
Yep. He's almost an untradeable asset, because if you're trading him now, it's at the lowest he's been since his first month after being drafted, and it makes no sense to move off him. And then trading for him, like Jacob said, there's no price. And I think that kind of just answers Pesh asked again. I'm also starting a 14 team tight end premium dynasty league. Who should be the first tight end picked? Is it still Kelce or Andrews or Pitts? It's Pitts to me.
For me, it's Pitts. I'll hear arguments for Andrews. I
think it's Andrews.
Kelce. I get that Kelce is, like, the guy that still goes there on occasion. I think that's bad. He is 34 years old. Like, the fact that it's way too high risk for me. I mean, and we're talking about a position of scarcity. You take on Kelce, you know that at some point in the next couple of years, you're going to have to face the prospect. You've invested a ton of tight end, and in short order, you will have to face the prospect of being without a tight end once again. And I mean, it can happen any day now. Like, there's no like guarantee of gradual decline for 34-year-olds. Like, I don't expect him to be bad this year. I'm not, like, full fading him in seasonal formats necessarily, although I am a little underweight. But that's way too high volatility for me. I'm okay with Andrews. Like, if you're just out on the Falcons and on Ritter and you think that environment's going to be so bad and you don't think it's ever going to turn around, like, I'll hear argument for Andrews. But for me, it's still Pitts and it's not that close.
See, I'm still going Andrews, and it's primarily just based on the fact that he's still young enough and we've seen him have that elite production and actually outscore Travis Kelce. And even after last year where you were kind of disappointed with his in fantasy point, like, output, he still ended up outperforming Travis Kelce in the vast majority of the stats that are on the new fantasy points data suite that you can download. Yeah, and so did Pitts too, but, like, Andrews, he has 25.1% target share, 31% first read percentage. His yards per route run still good, over 2, and his slot percentage was at 66%. Was not expecting that at all, and at least some of the models I've been running, he's going to outperform Travis Kelce this year.
So part of the things for me with on why it's Pitts is if Arthur Smith just stops taking Pitts off the field inside the five, it would go a long way in his fantasy production. I can't imagine that continues to be the norm there. No team took their star players off the field more than the Atlanta Falcons. London and Pitts came off the field inside the five at an alarming rate last season. I can't possibly imagine that staying that way. So it's Pitts for me, because there's so much room for him to grow. There's so much room for him to grow. And remember, Dynasty is not it's not a prisoner of the moment. People are like, oh, I won't draft X running back because of his, you know, the offense he plays in. That's not going to be his offense forever, probably. I don't like this quarterback because of his wide receiver core. Well, in 1 year, you can have two new wide receivers that are really good. Don't be a prisoner of the moment. Pitts has the youth, the ability, right? I know it's fun to poo-poo on the Atlanta Falcons offense, but Ritter's taking it all the way.
Yeah, and I will say, I'm not arguing for Kelce over Pitts. It's mainly just I would feel more comfortable going with Andrews over Pitts, have a little bit more surety in what I'd be getting back. Just something a little safer. Just a hair.
I don't see the risk whatsoever with Pitts. Like it's impossible. Like people talk about his down year, and I just don't have time for it. Like his target share, targets per run, air yard share, yards per run, everything that he can control was absolutely elite in year two. And it was a marked improvement over even his own stats in year one. His points per game obviously sucked. It's just that's in the past. Like I don't want to penalize him for past variance. I don't think it's conceivable to put up the types of figures that he did if he wasn't a special player. I don't know if he's going to score a lot of points this year. Like who knows? There's reason to have a lot of questions about that offensive environment. But again, like it's tight end. It's not receiver. Like I think if you want to make that case against London, I get a little more. Where you're like, yeah, okay, London's really good. He's going to be good. But when I want it now. All right, there's at least like enough other options of young wide receivers out there that I kind of get it. There's just no other guy that's shown this type of ceiling who's that age. To me, it's just Pitts. So I'm just taking it and I'm just waiting for it. And I don't know when it'll happen, but it'll be on my roster when it does.
Yeah, and you're going to be so fucking happy. Like, yeah. Can we just, it's going to be a great day for everyone that has believed and a bad day for everyone that's talked a copious amount of shit. When that happens, there are a couple other spots on the ADP boards that I want to talk about. Lamar Jackson moving back up, edging closer to that top six, top five dynasty pick. We knew what happened as soon as the bag was secured. Didn't matter for what team. Gone are the days where you could get 111 Lamar Jackson. Unfortunately, though, they were fantastic days where you could get, if you really wanted to, a Jackson Watson Kyler start was like doable every time. It was crazy. But gone to those days, back up to the 107 area. I think we kind of all expected that. Now Herbert too. I expect to see a big shift for Herbert now that he secured the bag. And I mean secured that fucking bag. Joe Burrow's contract's going to be just stupid. But that's why I said the money that they're paying Lamar Jackson is going to end up being a steal in like 3 years. So that's just how the market for quarterback works. I think we overreact to that a little bit. I want to talk about, Jacob, you have been talking a lot about the potential Breece Hall fall.
Yeah, I think it'll be way bigger seasonal. I don't think it's going to be like a massive fall in Dynasty.
You don't, eh? I could just imagine. So let me paint the scenario that I could see happening on the X app, which completely sounds like a porn app. 100% sounds like a porn app. But on the X app, this is the narrative I'm going to try to spin for you. And after this narrative, I want you to tell me, Lucas, because I know Jacob's just going to say no because he's a party pooper, because he doesn't he poo-poos on fictitious events. But
take advantage of my ignorance. Come on.
I will right now. Okay, so we're going to have coming off an injury, yeah, signed a workhorse running back, drafted a running back already in Izzy, wanted to draft Jahmyr Gibbs in the first round.
Robert, they didn't.
Hey, let me finish
the video.
Let me finish.
How did this become a thing?
Because they said it. They said that they were going to draft him at that spot had he not been picked already. I'm just saying. Okay, now check it out. Let me finish. Wanted to draft Gibbs in the first round. Okay, I'm using my Twitter, formerly Twitter.
Too much time with Scott.
That's also probably true. Okay, coming off injury and Saleh wanting to be a committee backfield-esque team. He's currently going as the RB3, I believe, right now in Dynasty. With all of that narrative, what's the farthest you think he's going to fall? What do you think his final flatline is going to be? If he's RB3, How far do you think the panic reaches once Dalvin Cook signs?
Maybe RB4, which is kind of wild to me, honestly. Like, the more and more I look at it, it's just, I know personally I am much higher on, say, Travis Etienne, Jahmyr Gibbs than Breece Hall right now. I just feel more comfortable. But
did you watch Breece Hall last year?
I did watch Breece Hall last year, and then I watched him go down with an ACL, and now I'm terrified. And that's my own thing. I get that's my own thing. All right. But I am even more terrified to invest a second round startup pick in somebody who might not be ready for the start of the season, is in a brand new offense, and people are, or in the team is trying to put more competition around him. That scares the crap out of me.
Didn't we just talk about this with Kyler Murray? How grateful we were to get him at the end of the second round because of the ACL, and he's not going to start the season. Breece Hall actually might play week one. Kyler Murray's not playing week one.
Fair enough. I'll give you that one, but I am not as afraid of an ACL injury with a quarterback as I am with a running back.
What about a running quarterback?
Ooh, that's a really good question. See, like, let me look at this and I'll get back to you.
That's where my holdup is.
I do agree with Lucas about where he'll fall to. I think he could fall to 5. Like, I apparently by ADP is already behind McCaffrey. That's the ADP is always going to skew a little. I would guess that in the average league of our listening audience, that will always skew younger than the ADP that you see reflected. So I think like McCaffrey RB2, I don't know how often that's happening in your leagues. But apparently he's already behind McCaffrey. I think he'll fall behind Taylor and Gibbs. And that seems fair enough to me. I don't think he gets any further than that. I mean, they invested day two picks into, like, compared to Etienne and Walker, who are two other young guys, right? The team's invested day two picks into direct competition for them. And that's like a long-term concern. Like, that's Tank Bigsby and Zach Charbonnet are going to be there for the duration of their rookie contracts. And they weren't injured this year. So that tells me, like, we envision our backfield with someone else as a part of it. Right, this Dalvin Cook thing is very different to me. Breece Hall is injured. It signals that they are not confident in what they're going to get out of Breece Hall in 2023. Which, yeah, they shouldn't be confident in what they're going to get out of Breece Hall in 2023. I'm not confident what we're going to get in Breece Hall 2023. They want to compete for a Super Bowl. They think running backs matter. Obviously, they do. They drafted Breece Hall at the beginning of the second round. So if you accept that they think that running backs matter, then it's logical that they don't want to play an entire Super Bowl chasing season with a 40-year-old quarterback relying on Izzy Abanikanda, Zonovan Knight, and Michael Carter. That's like all flows for me. Do I really care what they get out of him 2023 for Dynasty? Not really. Do I think like they know that Breece Hall's going to be bad and that they're limiting him? No. To me, it's clearly like it's a very uncertain situation with Hall. He could come back to form eventually, come back to form right away. He could never come back to form this year. And they need to have a contingency in place. They should be interested in other running backs. But if Hall does get up to speed, Cook wasn't any good last year. Like if Hall is what he was, then I'm not really worried about it. And I'm really not worried about Dalvin Cook for next year. Like he's going to be 29. I don't even know what the terms will be. It might be a 1-year contract or it might be like a 2-year contract, but it's a fake 2-year contract. They can easily get out of. That's my guess. My guess is it'll be like nominally a 2-year contract where if Cook is awesome this year, they can keep him at a reasonable number. And if he is toast, they can cut him and it costs him like $1 million. That's what I would foresee happening. And I mean, for Hall, we're kind of already playing the long game. If he didn't tear his ACL, he's probably a first round start. So I think we're getting a pretty considerable discount on him.
Yeah. You're buying that discount immediately. The second it happens. You will be sending out offers. This is where I think his floor is going
to
end up.
I don't even really need a discount. I just want a chance to purchase. Like, again, when we're talking about these guys, like, I don't need a discount on top guys. I just want the person who would have told me fuck off previously to say, okay, but you need to pay me a lot. That's to me is enough. Like, if I have the opportunity to buy a player of Breece Hall's caliber, because like, to me, it's clearly 5, or I don't even think McCaffrey as much. It's like 4 guys that are really ahead of the rest for me, which is, it's Bijan, obviously, Hall, and Taylor, and Gibbs as these young running backs that I feel really strongly about. Like, I would happily purchase one of them in every league, but I don't, you know, they're not always available. Right. So it's a matter of, like, is the person willing to sell them to me?
So that's the difference between somebody that's needs that discount to somebody who just needs the opportunity. So I feel like that's a pretty important distinction to make. I'll tell you what I think his floor is going to end up being at one point this offseason. At one point this offseason, the Javonte Williams hype is going to keep picking up. The more you see the clips of him running routes and wheel routes and him looking good and not being restricted, you're going to get close to him playing a preseason game where maybe we don't see Hall do that. I think that there's going to be a real opportunity to move Javonte Williams for Breece Hall with a lot less on top than you think there will need to be. People need to see things. And it's the same reason why Lucas was just saying he's nervous. He gets a little scared. He feels more comfortable with player X over this. Javonte Williams is RB 15, late fifth round pick in leagues. And I really see an opportunity where the disparity between startup value and what the trade value is going to end up being. People are going to see Javonte Williams running around, doing all this great stuff, thinking he's the next Kamara in the Sean Payton offense. All those narratives are going to click in. And, oh no, Dalvin Cook just signed with the Jets and they drafted Izzy and he's coming off an injury. Oh, he's absolutely cooked. Let me trade him away for this RB who's also coming off of a major injury who has never been as good as this other guy, but oh, looks like he's recovering faster. He must be hashtag better. I think that's a legitimate narrative that's going to pop up. I think that's going to be the floor.
So not completely related to this, but something I find very interesting with regards to these two players is both suffered ACL injuries last year. And if my memory serves me right, Javonte Williams suffered what people deem to be a more serious ACL injury. I am not a doctor, so I really can't answer that.
Hashtag not a doctor.
Yep. Yeah, hashtag not a doctor. But Javonte Williams was a second round startup pick for a lot of the leagues I was getting into last year. And now he's a late fifth, but Breece Hall, who was also a second round startup pick last year, is still a second round startup pick, even though he also suffered an ACL injury. Mm-hmm. I don't really understand why there's such a big disparity in those two values in terms to how one fell multiple rounds and one staying in the same round. Is the talent level really that different?
Yes, in my opinion.
Yes.
I think
okay. Yes.
Exponentially different. I think Breece Hall is the best running back talent that we've seen as a rookie in a long, long time. Like that was, he came in and was instantly one of the best running backs in the NFL.
He was Christian McCaffrey.
One of the most explosive running backs in the NFL. Did it on the ground. He did it in the air. Like when he went out, he looked like he was going to be unattainable for the next half decade. Like I think this is a guy that if he never tore his ACL, I think he would be the unanimous first overall selection in every redraft league this year.
Yep. Wow.
I don't think we're operating on the same plane. Like Javonte Williams played in the timeshare with Melvin Gordon his whole rookie year. Javonte Williams had one game, and it was unfortunately his last game, which is like the most cursed, sad fact. It was the last game where he eventually tore his ACL and a lot of other L's. He finally got to be the workhorse. Like it looked like that was the Javonte Williams breakout game where they tried to do this stupid committee again at the start of the year. Javonte was clearly better than Melvin, who played pretty good in Javonte's rookie year. And then Melvin was clearly washed last year. And they gave Javonte some run. And, you know, obviously he ends up tearing his ACL. I think Javonte's good. Like I don't mean this to disparage Javonte, but I think talent-wise, Javonte is like another group of talented, but in some way incomplete running backs. Like to me, if he was healthy, fully healthy, I think he's in that group with ETN and Walker. But to me, okay. Hall is like, I mean, to me, it's Hall and Taylor and Bijan that are like the guys where there's really no concerns. It's just a matter of like, you know, Taylor, I think has some situational concerns right now where his passing work is probably not going to get where we need to go. And Hall, of course, has the injury concerns. But I'm not entirely sure Bijan Robinson would be the consensus RB1 if Breece Hall doesn't get hurt.
Agreed. I would agree with that. One of the biggest things for rookie running backs is are they trusted with goal line carries? Well, it's safe to say that Breece Hall was. In the seven games he played, he accounted for 50% of the Jets' rushing attempts inside the 5-yard line. That is such a tell about how much they were willing to let him do. And remember, he did this on an offense that was dog shit.
I'm so mad he got hurt.
I know.
That was such an annoying, like, we have been cursed at the running back position.
I know.
Etienne, Dobbins, Akers, Javonte, Breece have now all suffered like a season-ending injury.
Significant.
Within their first 2 years in the NFL. That is nuts. Like, that is absolutely nuts that five guys with round one or round two pedigree come into the NFL and within their first 2 years lose an entire season. And you know, like, it very well may be, Luke. It's like, I don't – my whole take is very much like it's a dynasty take that I think is a guy that I want to get in on whenever I can. And it's a redraft take that I think it's worth the price of admission. But I don't have any conviction over what we'll see in 2023. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he sucks this year. Like, that's totally plausible.
After all that, here comes Najee Harris to plodder his way to consistent.
How did he ever get hurt? Oh. God.
He's not explosive enough to get hurt. Like, let's, could that be it? I don't know.
I'm not, for the record, wishing an injury on Najee Harris. I would like none of them to get injured, but
we had to
sacrifice one. Couldn't it be Najee Harris?
Oh my God. If it ends up happening now, people are going to
do like a running back ritual sacrifice. I guess that's what I would bestow upon the gods.
Yeah, I will say this. If we get into a point in the offseason where you're seeing Javonte in a second for Breece Hall as a normal trade, we need to make sure we report that to the masses to take advantage of. For me, both those two are coming on the same sort of like risk factor. So it's much easier for somebody who's extremely risk averse to look at them through the same lens and going, okay, Breece Hall's clearly the better talent. So they're coming from very similar backgrounds of both coming off ACL injuries, both having changes in the offense.
I mean,
might as well take advantage of the better talent.
I mean, we could even say Eckler in the round four right now, early round four is going to be possible to move Eckler for Breece Hall for very little on top to a lot of people.
I mean, I think we'll see stuff like that, especially if we get into the season and Breece does struggle out of the gate. Like, yeah, if he's struggling out of the gate or we can't play or whatever. Like, you know, every team's going to be different, but I'm sure there'll be teams that have Breece Hall that want to contend right away this year. And if he's not helping that, you know, we saw this last year, like last year at the trade deadline, you could move. You could move Barkley for Hall, or you could move, you know, and really any other running back that was scoring a ton of points. You could potentially move Jacobs for Hall. Like, I think that'll happen for sure. That if once we get into the season, people's dynasty goggles come off a little bit and Eckler is scoring 20 points a game and Breece Hall's scoring 12, like, then it's very possible.
And that's why I was saying that I really think once people see like videos of Javonte, he's going to skyrocket up the board. I have a short going to be coming out soon about why I think Javonte is going to be the fastest riser in ADP in the next two months.
I totally agree with that. I mean, I haven't talked about it in dynasty context, but in like best ball, I was tweeting about it where I didn't expect to be on Javonte this year. But it really didn't make a lot of sense. Like when Best Ball Mania first opened, when the big board first opened, which is their pre-draft best ball contest, he was going in round six. He's now kind of finally starting to move up, but he was going at the very back end of round eight. And I was like, you know, I didn't think that the sixth price was great at the time, but since then, everything's gone way better than I thought it would. The only guy they added was Perine. They didn't draft anybody. All the reports on his health have been way more positive than I thought. He didn't end up on the pop. Like, why did he go down? Like, if anything, like, I think I'm stunned at how well the recovery has gone for Javonte Williams. I mean, that's part of it with Breece Hall and Javonte Williams. I think at the time, part of it was Breece Hall's a better talent, and the other part of it was Javonte Williams had the much more significant injury. But for whatever reason, Javonte has seemed to respond, you know, really, really well to this injury, better than Breece has, frankly. I mean, he's the one who's currently practicing in full. So, I think that part of it, and we don't know. I remember this. I'm leery of just dismissing the injury now. Like, remember with James Robinson last year when it was like, oh my God, he's not going to play ever again. And then it was like, oh my God, he didn't even go on pup. He's going to be ready to rock week one. And then everyone was like, oh wait, he sucks now though, because he tore his Achilles and he can't play anymore. Like, that's still a possibility, right? I don't think if it gets to a point where it's like, oh, Javonte is just good now, he's just Javonte again, like, he might still get out there week one and look like shit. That's also possible. But I totally agree. I think he's going to rise a lot because I think the market is going to have to realize that we assume that his injury timeline is going to be very different than it is.
Yeah. No, I agree. That's why I said I think he's gonna be the biggest riser. One of the I got two more points here, so I'm gonna try to hit him quick. Strategically, I see 13 running backs going in the first five rounds right now.
Yeah.
In this bulletproof ADP, I don't remember the last time I've seen this. The shift in pro running back at this time of the year. I won't even say that it seems crazy to me, but this feels like a serious shift in dynasty. It feels like it's a legitimate difference between the last couple of years that I've been drafting. Granted, you'd be like, how long have you been playing dynasty? Seriously been playing dynasty since 2020, right? I'm not saying that I'm like an old cat in the game. I'm not, I'm going to admit that. Looking back on previous data, I don't know if you guys have seen this before, but 13 running backs in the first five rounds seems strong to me, especially with how
Is it the law?
I'm sorry?
Like, is it it's a high number or a low number?
I think it's a high number. I think 13 running backs.
You want to guess how many running backs were going the top five rounds July of 2022?
Oh, my God. I'm going to be way off on this, aren't I? I'll say I think it's like 9.
The answer is 18.
What?
13 get out is not of town. A high number.
It was actually 18?
Yes.
Yeah, oh my 18. God. Let me try to see. Was Dalvin Cook going?
Certainly. Dalvin Cook was going in the third round this time last year.
Jesus Christ. Oof. Joe Mixon, Derrick Henry. You know
absolutely.
What?
Absolutely. Henry was going in the fourth. It was Jonathan Taylor and Najee Harris were the two in the first round. Najee Harris, first round ADP, by the way, last year.
In Superflex draft?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I saw it in real life. I mean, like, he definitely did not have an average ADP in the first in my leagues, but like I just said before, I think there's always going to be a difference between our leagues and what ADP is, but I did see him go in the first. Second round running backs included Javonte Williams, Christian McCaffrey, DeAndre Swift, Breece Hall, Austin Eckler. Round three running backs, Joe Mixon, Dalvin Cook. Round four running backs, Cam Akers, Nick Chubb, Travis Etienne, Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry, and round five running backs, Ken Walker, Aaron Jones, J.K. Dobbins, and Alvin Kamara.
I'm stunned. Life comes at you fast.
Would you like to guess how many running backs were going in the first five rounds in July of 2021?
Yes, please. Now that we're doing it, please tell me. Destroy my take.
Wait. I don't think I must not have hit something properly. There we go. And apply.
Like, just destroy my take completely.
Oh, okay, you guys need to talk. All of a sudden, my filters aren't working quite as well.
While you're pulling that up, for kicks and giggles...
Wait, Miles Sanders was definitely going that high in 2021.
I got hit.
I drafted him in the late third in a startup that Jacob and I both did.
I think I traded a crapload of things to get him from you.
Yeah, so there were 22 running backs going in the top
Jesus
five rounds.
Jesus Christ!
Yeah, people, the running back market has died a lot. We're going to play name that running back.
Okay? Oh my God. Okay. Okay.
I
love this surprise.
There were a total of five running backs going in the first round in 2021, July of 2021. Can you guess these running backs?
All right.
We're going to go round by round. You each get the trade off and you each get three strikes. Okay.
Okay. All right. You want to go first, Tom?
No, please be my guest.
All right. I'm going to say Saquon Barkley.
We'll open this all up to the first. We can go to the full five. We don't need to go round by round. There's 22 total.
Yeah.
2 years ago this month, Bulletproof Superflex Dynasty ADP. There's 22 total, back and forth, and you each get a total of three strikes and you're out. Okay. Okay, so you get two misses. You got Saquon Barkley. Okay, Saquon Barkley was going in the first round.
Okay, that's a good call. I'll say Josh Jacobs.
Josh Jacobs was going in the fifth round.
His ADP has not shifted that much, which is insane.
That's the thing. Josh Jacobs, it was like his ADP has managed to stay the same the whole time. Because like he got, you know, he came in as a rookie, and then he was like good enough that he like went up. He went way up after his rookie year, but then he went way down after his second year. And then he's been better each of the last 2 years, but he's also gotten older, so he's just never actually changed. He just keeps going the same place, even though he's getting way better.
People will do studies about Josh Jacobs' ADP in the future.
It won't make any sense. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to try to take another easy one here. Christian McCaffrey.
Yes, Christian McCaffrey.
You're just taking the low
Christian McCaffrey was the 103 overall.
Man, those were fun times.
Okay, you said this is 2021?
Yeah, just 2 years ago. Not a long time ago.
Man, okay. I don't know why I feel this way, but I really feel like, well, Austin Eckler definitely had to have been.
Yeah, he's going in the fourth round.
So there's one more.
That's a great value if you got Eckler. You lost zero ADP value and gotten 220-point season.
Yeah.
All right. Dalvin Cook.
Yes, going in the first round.
First round.
That's three for three, baby.
RB2 off the board, 108 overall.
Do you think this maybe has something to do with the quarterbacks being bumped up in Superflex? Because
you got to also remember 2021, Jamar Chase had never taken a snap yet. Justin Jefferson, we only had his rookie year, right? Like these wide receivers, there weren't as many of them. Jalen Waddle, not in the NFL. Tavon Smith, not in the NFL.
Right. And guys like
they're in the NFL. They've been drafted, but they were rookies.
Plus, we had just been blessed with ridiculous running back seasons year after year. And the big way that you win fantasy football was draft your workhorse running back and ride him to a championship. So
you were a fucking boomer. That's crazy. So here I was thinking 13 was high, but we do a little exercise. And then
you got to remember this is the rookie season of Burrow, Herbert, Tua, Hurts. Right. So that's four quarterbacks that are currently all going in the first three rounds, three of them in the first round. And at this point,
in the top five, three of them.
Right. And none of them are obviously going there.
No Lawrence. No Fields.
Justin Herbert's ADP at this time was, I mean, I'm even trying to find it.
Get really leaned in there, Jacob. Let the people see. Let the people see the reflection off your eyeballs.
I'm going to use Command F. There we go.
There we go.
That's what I can do. Oh, no, this was – oh, sorry. Sorry, this was after the rookie season, so my bad. Justin Herbert was the 105 already.
Yeah.
But Burrow is not.
ADP.
Okay, you get five. We're going to have to speed this up. We got 22 names.
Zeke Elliott.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Hold on. I thought we were – I'm just looking for the running backs that were drafted in the top five. Derrick Henry.
Yes, top five.
I was looking for running backs that are being drafted still in that range.
Okay.
So I'll say Derrick Henry. This gets even easier then.
Yeah. So there's the five in the first round, right?
Oh, that's I don't think we've gotten them all yet, but I haven't been keeping track of the first round versus the other round.
That's okay. We'll just get the names.
Yeah, I'm just doing all 22. You've gotten four of the five in the first round for what it's worth, but you got seven total. Keep going. We got 15 more.
Nick Chubb.
Yeah.
Fuck, that was totally going to be mine. Joe Mixon.
Absolutely.
Ooh. Aaron Jones.
You bet.
Miles Sanders.
Yes, he's the last one of the group. RB22 at 5'11".
Okay.
Okay. Cam Akers.
You bet.
Really? Okay.
This was the peak of the Cam Akers value. This is coming off the rookie season.
This was you hyping him up for fucking the next level.
This was right before the Achilles tear. This is the best that ever got for Cam Akers.
Ezekiel Elliott.
I already said him.
Not even guess, but yeah.
Oh, okay. Shit. Oh boy. Derrick Henry?
10 more to go.
You already said Derrick.
I said Derrick Henry.
Come on. He's already been gone.
You know I'm not good with the names. I'm trying to think of someone way down there.
David Montgomery.
Yeah, David Montgomery is correct.
2 years ago?
Mm. I remember buying him all the time.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the third round.
Oh my gosh.
Now around Alvin Kamara. 17 pick.
Alvin Kamara in the first round.
Yep.
Okay. Ooh. Leonard Seven Fournette.
More. Oh, completely forgot.
I want to say probably not, but I'm trying to find him. No, he was going in the 11th round.
Mm.
Okay, so the fall had already started. Depeche, I nailed that CEH pick already. I nailed that one. I'm trying to think.
I'll let the chat get in on this. The chat can try to beat you guys.
James Conner?
No, he couldn't have been around. No,
James Conner was... James, that was prior to his comeback season in Arizona. Okay. James Conner's way down the board.
And you already said Dalvin?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, what about 2 years ago? I want to say... Did we say Taylor?
You actually have not.
I'll say Jonathan Taylor.
Yes, he was going in the first round.
Okay. How many wrong guesses do we have left?
You have one strike. Lucas has zero strikes, so he's cleaning up. Well,
fine, Lucas.
All right, I'm going.
You're looking at it right now. I can see you looking at your second monitor. You cheating bastard!
No, I'm looking at the current ADP, and I'm trying to remember names.
That's still kind of cheating, but okay.
Devin Singletary.
No,
I'm trying, man.
That is the most I caught you cheating answer. I can't remember anyone else.
All right,
J.K. Dobbins.
Correct.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe I forgot J.K. Dobbins. Actually, no, I can't.
How many do I have left? Three
I
names.
Can't remember that.
There's six names remaining.
What?
Five names remaining.
Oh my gosh.
I'm never gonna get all these.
You said Joe Mixon.
Yeah. Every other running back is a lot younger than you think they are. Every running back remaining was either drafted in 2020 or 2021.
AJ Dillon.
No. Second X for Tom. Lucas is at 1X.
I was real confident with that, too.
Elijah Mitchell.
No.
He couldn't have been.
He was a rookie. He had just been drafted.
2 years ago.
Yes, the past. Najee Harris, correct?
Oh, crap.
I can't believe we didn't say Najee. Oh, my God. Okay, what about... Okay, my last guess is going to be Sugar Rashad Penny.
Absolute act.
Travis Etienne.
Correct.
Oh, three 2 years. Oh, my God, I have another one.
Yeah, well, you're out.
I am out.
Javonte Williams.
You. Correct. You got two more. Can you win this?
All right, did we say DeAndre Swift yet?
Now you did. One more.
I know who it is. I'm 90% sure I know who it is.
Oh, no.
This is the hard one for sure. This is the one.
I think I know. I'm going to get
him going in the second round, this guy.
Oh, okay. I don't know who it is then.
He was in the second round? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, we're ending the show on this, too.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Can you go over who's already been said real quick? All right.
Saquon, Jacob, CMC, Eckler, Dalvin Cook, Zeke Henry, Chubb Mixon, Aaron Jones, Miles Sanders, Cam Akers, David Montgomery, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Alvin Kamara, Jonathan Taylor, J.K. Dobbins, Najee Harris, DeAndre Swift, Travis Etienne, Javonte Williams. And a second-round pick remains.
A second-round pick.
That's crazy.
You're out of three strikes.
Oh, my gosh.
You have one gap for all the money, even though this isn't for money, but for all the
I'm
prize.
Trying to think of the most random second round
so that
round
you can
pick.
Lord this over Tom for the rest of his life.
Oh, my God. I don't want this kind of pressure. Oh, no.
Welcome back, baby.
Oh, my gosh.
Two years ago.
Yes. If the chat can get, then
chat,
you get the Lord
please,
over Tom. And
please help me.
Hey, chat doesn't get it over me. I got more names than them. Come
I'm trying
on,
to think
chat.
Of a random second round pick that we had that was getting value. And holy cow.
2 years ago.
Oh my gosh.
Drafted between 2020 and 2021, you said, right? Or 21 and 22.
That's true. I didn't even 2020 and 2021.
I think I know who it is, but I'm out of guesses. Ooh, that's a good guess, Depeche. I don't think that's going to be it, but that's a good guess.
I'm
name the name right. You're looking
three,
for.
Is it Trey Sermon?
No, but he was going in round seven. The answer is Antonio Gibson.
Thank you. That's what I was going to say.
No, I screwed it up.
I'm not kidding.
Antonio Gibson.
That's why I said I wanted the bonus because I knew who it was. I knew who it was.
You shouldn't have used three strikes.
God damn. I knew that one. That's Damian Harris you're thinking of. That's not
quite
it. That's crazy and unreal.
I'll give you bonus points if you can name the next four running backs. Talk about the RB dead zone. If anyone wants to give a shot at naming the next four off the board in the RB 23, 24, 25, and 26, not a lot was won on those next four. It was Chris Carson, followed by Miles Gaskin, followed by Trey Sermon, followed by Kareem Hunt. So,
Kareem Hunt was one that doesn't surprise me. There was a real Kareem Hunt's going to get the job one day, folk. And guess what? That never happened.
So before you said when they were drafted, Chris Carson was going to be one. My guess is a top 24. I guess, his value hadn't completely tanked after his injuries yet. Kareem Hunt, I thought about, but I don't know. He's never even been a top 24 redraft running back.
Kareem Hunt has perpetually lived in the back end of the RB dead zone for his entire Browns career.
I can't believe I forgot about Antonio Gibson.
I had it. It was right there, and I blew all my strikes.
You blew it.
Absolutely blew that. Look, I was going to have one more point, but the bonus game, I really like that.
That was
a nice little bit. I'm going to have to try to find one to stump Jacob with when he comes back.
If we want to play Remember That Guy, I'm here for Remember That Guy.
Okay, that's going to be a new bit until the start of the season. Remember That Guy. That's going to replace Billy's stat corner until Billy reemerges from whatever depths and shadows
we miss you, Billy.
He's been staying in. We do miss you, Billy. Look, that's going to be it. We got an hour and 22 here on this welcome back episode for Lucas. We didn't take it easy on him. Today was a good day. Lots of great discussions, a lot of good predictions. I can't wait. Jacob, I know your schedule is about to get nuts and you're going away.
I will be here next week. I will be here Friday next week, and then I go to Ireland after that.
Okay, then we're going to get a couple of weeks without Jacob. We'll still be here. But we're going to have a Remember That Guy next week. I just got to think of what it's going to be now. I really, really loved that game. And
that's tough.
I know you've been hammering hard the thinking about thinking. What are your readers that for some reason haven't subscribed have to look forward to?
Yeah, this is going to be probably my busiest week of writing since the first week after rookie drafts. I'm now free of law obligations for at least the next little bit. So I'm going to be going on a little camping trip tomorrow, and then I'm back. And basically Monday through Saturday before I leave for Ireland, I'm going to be writing every single day. So I'm going to have a couple pieces up, taking off my projections, highlighting a few interesting situations. I'm going to have my redraft rankings out. I already have my best ball rankings out and my dynasty rankings out. And then I'm going to start up. We'll see either late next week or early the week afterwards, maybe from the plane. I'm going to start my off-season version of the Hitchhiker's Guide to Running Back. So we're going to start canvassing all of the backfields across the NFL as we start to narrow down our list for the guys we're gonna focus in on hard for the season. So lots of fantasy writing coming up on Thinking About Thinking.
Nice.
And such an incredible price, too. It's just so absolutely 100% worth it. Lucas, you've just been back, but you're working on new models, new projects all the time.
Yeah. That's pretty much all I've been doing in my free time was I decided as soon as I got back, I didn't know what the fantasy football landscape looked like anymore. And throughout my Googling, I found something on the Fantasy Points website about fantasy football wins above replacement. And because value above replacement is so subjective, I really liked what they were doing with that and saw it and said, this is only for ESPN leagues and I'm only in one ESPN league. So might as well make this same metric for all of my other leagues that I'm in. And so that's why I've been crushing right now, is trying to develop a new fantasy football war metric that can be applied to any league that you're in for positions. Getting really close to hopefully having something pretty cool about that soon. Don't know where it will be, but it will be coming to you all at some point.
Cool.
Sometime, cool. Somewhere. And of course, with Lucas being back, our regular content schedule should kind of be back in order, back in business. And if you missed at the beginning, if you want to win a 2023 subscription to the Fantasy Points Data Suite, which you should, because it's fucking awesome, all you have to do is comment on the most recent video, be subscribed, and post what Discord you're from. Bulletproof. Full Tilt, and just put FP Data Suite, and I will be picking winners, 8 to 9 winners for the show next week, where I will read them off and I will collect your information. Those of you that have already won, I left a reply comment on the comment that you made that I picked for you to win to DM me. You have until this week to once again DM me El Nostra Thomas on Discord or any other app you can get to me through, which is all of them, from Twitch to Kick to Instagram. It's El Nostra Thomas on all of them. I'm very easy to find. DM me or you will lose your winnings, and I will select somebody else from the last group of winners. I'm trying to be as fair as I can. This data suite is, again, awesome. Jamie, dang, I missed the whole show. Start over. No can do, buckaroo.
Hey, that's the YouTube. You can just scroll right back when you get it.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
it is pretty wonderful. But look, that's how you can win a 2023 Data Suite subscription. You're going to want to do that. And guess what? If you're a UFC fan and a fan of UFC betting, I have started a new podcast with Scott Barrett, TJ Calkins, and Stephen Cox on Twitter called the Go Pada UFC podcast. And check that out. Second episode dropped last night. We previewed the fights tomorrow, UFC 291. I'm very proud of that pod. It's in its infancy, but like any other project I'm attached to, it's going to be dedicated, to say the least. And of course you can find me streaming over there on Twitch and Kick. Head over there, hit that follow button. However, that's going to do it for us today. This was a great fucking time. I have missed this so absolutely much. I cannot wait to get back into the full swing of things. We're reaching out to guests here again shortly. Going to try to do one more Gauntlet Legend run before NFL kickoff. Got to obviously do the Pat Daugherty real blurb. No, we've been waiting for this period of the season.
He's a summer guest. Yeah. Well, we'll bring back my favorite game that I ever played on Full Tilt, which was Beat or No Beat.
Right.
Where I draft fake Roto World blurbs and then pit them against real life old Roto World blurbs and see if Roto Pat and Tom can determine if they are in fact a real Roto World blurb.
Do a mob ties?
And you. I love it. No mob ties yet. Look, I told you we're doing one more gauntlet heading into the season. We've been saving it. The schedule has been crazy, Lucas. Yeah. Get off my back. Angie says Celtics fans should be centered on all topics. Okay, that's a good one to ride out on. Look, I want to thank everyone for popping in. If you haven't already, hit the subscribe button. Go win yourself a 2023 Data Suite entry. We'll see you right back here next week for the next episode of the Full Tilt Dynasty podcast. Remember that clear eyes and full hearts can never lose your best days. Goddamn, they're always meant tilting. You can still do it in one breath. See you later. Peace.